This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we are talking to Jalil Rashid, the President and Chief Executive of Permodalan Nasional Berhad, aka PNB, with 300 billion ringgit in assets under management. Jalil, thank you for talking to us. Let's start with your point of view in terms of the markets and the direction of fund flows at this point in time. Obviously, stateside in America, huge rally in the last 3 months, and then with a consequent rally in Malaysia as well. What do you think is the longevity of this rally in terms of the impetuses behind it, where the Federal Reserve quantitative easing is concerned?
Right. So to put the narrative right, when we did our annual report launch a few weeks ago, I used the word unprecedented and unknown is what we are currently facing, because within this context, there's three crises that have emerged. One is an economic crisis globally. Second is a health crisis. And third is a financial crisis. Although I say this time around, less of an issue with financial crisis, because banks are relatively stronger compared to the other crises that we've had. But the worrying thing is that all these three crises are happening at the same time, which has compounded the issues. But however, markets have run ahead of reality, right? You know, we saw the US market was down about 35% in a single month, but then subsequently recovered to have the strongest 50-day rally ever in the S&P 500 history, which suggests that quite a lot of this have been driven by whether we are getting a cure for the vaccine, whether we're not. So it's going a bit in and out. The strength of the local market as well has been driven very much by retail investors. So retail participation has gone up. And that has been in selective pockets of stocks, not broad-based across the index. So to your question, whether it's there is longevity to this, I say no. I would say that the strength of the market is rather speculative right now, because it's not really been driven by a lot of fundamentals, simply because the true state of the economy will only be known perhaps towards the end of the year, because a lot of in Malaysia, there are a lot of loan moratorium recipients as well. And we will see how they emerge from this crisis towards the end of the year. And that's when I think we will able to say for sure how quickly and how strongly the economy will recover.
The eternal fund manager conundrum, isn't it, Jalil? Divide between Wall Street and Main Street. As a fund manager yourself, albeit one of the biggest, how do you position your funds going forward, especially in this low yield environment?
Yeah, so I've always had one mantra, which is to prepare and not predict, right? I think once you get into the prediction game, you're getting into a very dangerous speculative game. And we are not speculators; we're long-term investors. We have the benefit of investing over the longer term. So a lot of the stopgap measures that we have done and a lot of the planning from portfolio is always to kind of prepare ourselves that if the market were to turn, what levers can we pull? Secondly, from an investment strategy point of view, is to be conservative top-down and to be aggressive bottom-up. What I mean by that is that, you know, when we look at sectors or countries that we want to be invested in, I think we get a clear sense about, you know, what are the sectors we want to avoid at this point in time. But I think when we look at the sectors that we would like to invest, we can be quite aggressive with the names. There's a lot of new sub-segments that have emerged that are quite interesting as well. And that is where how we have kind of tightened up the process in terms of the investment strategy. Because I think if anybody here is saying that, you know, they know exactly where the market is going and what to invest in, I think they're taking everyone for a ride here.
Absolutely. And in the here and now, obviously, some of your portfolio investments, especially in oil and gas, are under serious threats. Sapura Energy, of course, one of them. Velasco is another. To what extent has the malaise been in that sector, and how have you prepared to mitigate that loss?
It's unfortunate that the oil crisis has also come up around the same time. And both Balesto and Sapura are what we would call contractors in the oil and gas space. So somewhat the margins are compressed and oil prices are compressed. So the majors cut their capex, and then that cost savings is then whittles its way down to that chain and affects Sapura and Balesto. I've been very clear about this in other interviews as well, that there needs to be a serious rethink about how these companies look like in the future, right? You know, in terms of its cost base, in terms of its reach geographically, and in terms of its reliance on, volatile earnings. So the view that we have at BNB is that these companies should have a bit more recurring income in nature and all that. In order to get there, some difficult decisions need to be made. We need to cut costs, which is not going to be nice. And those efforts are currently ongoing. But it's not a gone case, because they do have very, very good assets that could be monetized. We could do a sale and lease back. So there are various initiatives that are being explored right now.
Okay.
But yes, we have, yeah.
Okay, so that means it's going to be a restructure approach as opposed to a reduce approach, a la Warren Buffett and the financial sector with Berkshire. Moving on to the commercial real estate space, which already was suffering from an oversupply situation pre-pandemic. I want to get your response from this in the context of Merdeka 118 as well, which is obviously got quite a lot of net lettable space. What's your approach to the commercial real estate sector? How troubled is it? And what are you going to do with that skyscraper in particular?
Okay, so that skyscraper, the plan for that came up more than 10 years ago. So it's not a new project. So we started working on it for from late 2000s. And we currently have about 70 or 80% of the office space accounted for already. Then we've got also the commercial space. The commercial space is something that we are talking to the tenants about right now. And we are about 2 years away from opening the mall. So typically we get tenants in about a year before that. We have to rethink the approach to what sort of tenant. We had in mind some tenants and now we're rethinking it. But we do have the benefit of time for the next 1 year. We have put on hold certain other residential launches. In the master plan, there were plans to launch a lot more residential units. We've put that on hold for a while. So we're just going to go ahead with the office tower and the commercial mall for the time being.
Okay, quick point of view, Jalil, on the other parts of your portfolio, most notably the financial services sector. Maybank is, a core holding of yours, nearly 50% inside there. What, in your opinion, is the resilience of the dividend policy where Maybank is concerned, given the fact that a lot of the possible impairments and possible losses have not yet emerged?
Yeah, so which is why we have said that the expectations from unit holders need to be realistic this year, because a lot of our income comes from our strategic companies and it comes from the dividends from the strategic companies. Although I do think the companies that we have can still pay dividends, but maybe the quantum of the dividends may not necessarily be as high as it used to be. And for obvious reasons as well. I do think that in the context of some of our larger companies, they are in a better strength to ride out this crisis compared to perhaps 97 or even 2008, because they've got a lot of cash. But the concern here is that we don't know how the economy is going to look like in the near term.
Would you advocate a share buyback strategy for some of these more defensible companies?
Well, that's a question that they need to make, that the board needs to make, not us. As far as we are concerned, we are fund managers there. And, when prices go up, we do take advantage of that by taking profit, because our returns to unit holders come from dividends and also from capital gains.
We're talking this morning to Jalil Rashid, the President and Chief Executive of Permodalan Nasional Berhad, PNB, with 300 billion ringgit in assets under management. We'll come back after this, Jalil, talk about your tweaking of your investment strategy and your foray overseas, where you plan to get 30% of returns from international markets within the next 2 years. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
This morning, I'm talking to Jalil Rashid, the President and CEO of Permodalan Nasional Berhad, PNB, with 300 billion ringgit in assets under management. Now, Jalil, you've been quite public in saying that PNB wants to get 30%, a third of its returns from overseas within the next 2 years. And I think you've also mentioned real estate and private equity as possible sectors, both of which seem to be quite troubled now, but and of course long term in nature. How will you do that? And in which countries, in which sovereign nations in particular?
Yeah, so the idea is to have 30% of our total assets invested overseas. And that could mean that the income contribution can be even higher than that. But, you know, currently we are about 90% invested in Malaysia, 10% overseas. Idea is to get to 70-30 by the end of 22. And this would be across all asset classes, public markets, private markets, and also real estate. Now, on real estate, we have already started diversifying even before COVID-19 happened. We moved away from the typical office space in the UK, where we have now already invested in a portfolio of logistic assets in Europe as well. And we're looking at similar ones in Asia and also in North America. And as we know, since post-COVID, logistics have been quite a big beneficiary due to the boom in the e-commerce. So we got into that space earlier. And then we've also been looking at, we also already have data centers as well for the last few years, especially in Malaysia, again, beneficiary of this. So we've retweaked our real estate by looking into sub-segments along, to kind of say that everything within real estate is bombed out may not be accurate. There are certain pockets that continue to do well and are even doing better. So that's where we're putting in the assets. On private equity, we have traditionally been very developed market centric. And I think that has been because of the governance process that we do put in place. We do find that regulations and laws are much better for investors like ourselves. So we have tended to be a bit more exposed there. But we are looking at something we are looking at certain fund opportunities in Asia as well. I do have to also say that on private equity, we do invest in funds rather than going in directly. You won't see PNB going in and buying over a company overseas. We would do it as part of a fund investment.
Okay, now obviously you will be undertaking a fair degree of foreign exchange risk as well. In particular, how would you mitigate the FX risk, especially from the US dollar perspective, the country of which seems to be really extending its ability to print money on a huge basis, unprecedented basis with their reserve currency status? Do you fear, in essence, that the US dollar might be vulnerable in the future?
Our biggest risk to achieving that 30% target is actually the exchange rate, right? Because our receipts, our money comes in ringgit and then it goes out in overseas currency. If the ringgit becomes weaker, it becomes expensive for us. One of the first things I did when I joined in October was set up a treasury desk. So we now have a dedicated specialist treasury team that looks at the holistic view of PNB's forex requirements, debt management, and all this. We are looking at hedging strategies as well to kind of mitigate that foreign. The risk is always going to be there, but there are tools that can be deployed. For example, for real estate and private equity, it is really pretty much a leverage play. There is no need for us to deploy 100% equity whenever we buy an asset overseas. We can actually raise foreign funding in overseas and not have to deploy our equity. So that is what the treasury desk is doing, looking at our optimal capital management, looking at our existing debt and also looking at hedging strategies.
Well, obviously, in real estate, and neither real estate nor private equity are core expertise sectors for yourselves at PNB. On what terms would you hire external fund managers, Jalil, and how would these be structured?
Yeah. You know, there are two ways to look at this, right, Chuang? Either we do this internally ourselves, which will take a long time, or we work with external managers, and where we mapped out what is our area of expertise and where we would like to be exposed that we don't have that expertise. And that is where we are bringing in the external fund managers. So, for example, we have always been managing global equities internally, but it's been a bit more US and Europe centric. We have outsourced money to external managers to look at a global portfolio and emerging markets portfolio as well. We'll be looking at the same for fixed income. And on real estate as well, we've been looking at external managers for more specialist kind of roles like warehousing and a lot of other sub-segments. And also private equity, which is where I think a lot of skills need to come in because it's a very, very domestic-centric kind of business.
What is the timeline to identifying some of these houses? And you know, I think more specifically, on what terms would they be hired?
Okay, so for private equity, that's been an ongoing process for the last 2 years. We've already invested a lot with the external managers over the past 2 years. Real estate, we've already been doing that. Equity, we have already hired. We're pending appointing them. On fixed income, that process is still ongoing. So that process is already ongoing now. In terms of terms, one thing I was very clear is that there must be a knowledge transfer. You know, we cannot be outsourcing to the point that we lose knowledge. We need to be able to reap benefits of that. So the plan is that we will place our managers with the external managers. We will learn about best practice, governance process, and bring that back. I always say that the external fund managers should always be ahead of us in the skills, but as and such time that we develop that skills, we can insource that back and give the money to a particular expertise at that point in time that we don't have.
Okay. We're talking this morning to Jalil Rashid, the President and Chief Executive of PNB, which is the Permodalan National Berhad, with 300 billion ringgit in assets under management. On to the return standpoint, Jalil. Obviously, it's a challenge to be meeting, to be obtaining the same kind of returns we've enjoyed the last 10 years. What's a realistic return expectation for unit holders going forward for at least the next 3 years?
So when we sat at the board and we said that there must be a sustainable rate of return. Now I would caution about giving a number because these things move. But when we were formed, the objective of the funds was always to give a return higher than the fixed deposit rate. And I think this is where I think from a communication standpoint, a lot of things were lost because back then in the 70s and 80s, the FD rate was pretty high. So were the interest rates as well. And then hence why the returns were much higher. Then as that reduced, the returns also reduced. The idea is always to have a decent spread between the fixed deposit and our returns. But we said that it must be reflective of the markets. But although it will be higher than the FD. So that is what we are working towards. In order to satisfy that, we do need to rethink about how we allocate our assets, right? It's in the fund management industry, is what we call capacity issues. It's about when you grow to a certain size, you need to alter your investment style so that you are able to move around the portfolio in a much quicker way. And I think that is what we are now doing in order for us to be a bit more reflective of the size of our funds.
Well, with some, if not all, of PNB funds not quoted in NAV, how are your investments signified? Are they mark to market?
Yeah, so they are. We do market to market internally, and because a large chunk of that is a fixed price funds. So over the years, what we have done is that on years that we have done very well, we don't pay out all the dividends. We do keep the excess up in our reserves. The reserves are unique to each fund. We don't transfer the reserves from the fund. And then on certain years that markets have not done very well, we do take a bit into those reserves, right? And that is how we want to give that sustainable rate of return. So that's how it's been managed. But you know, moving forward, we have said that a lot of the new funds that we are launching would be more on the variable price funds rather than the fixed price funds.
Okay, and of course, this period that we find ourselves in is obviously a period where dipping into reserves might be beneficial in terms of giving back to unit holders. Going forward, to what extent will you try not to dip into reserves? And where will new money come from? Obviously unit holder contributions will be one, but how else, other than the dimension that you talked about in terms of your international non-equity capital raising efforts?
Yeah. So we traditionally, over the last few years, we have sat on a lot of cash. You know, at one point, PNB sat on more than 20% cash. We don't need to hold that amount of cash. And it was then that we had then had a proper strategic asset allocation framework. We brought it down. So today we are at about 12 to 13%. That can go down further. Our deployment in real estate and fixed income would be done through a combination of debt and equity. So we don't need to use that cash entirely. Yes, I do think that our subscriptions into the units will be lesser this year, simply because of people want to conserve a lot more cash. So that would be, we won't see the AUM growth as we have seen robustly over the last few years, which is why, to my earlier point, the treasury component is very important, really knowing how to deploy our capital well. At which point do we use leverage? At which point do we use equity? We can comfortably reach 30% with the sort of cash and debt requirements that we have right now. We can reach comfortably 30%.
Okay, the market has taken quite warmly to the fact that you've talked about how PNB might take on a more activist approach as an institutional investor on the RAC, of course. But there's one thing that you maybe can't avoid, and how would you avoid it? Because you would have seen some of the GLC appointments in the last 3 months have been... Let's just say they're not based on technical merit. How would you avoid those appointments to your roster of investees where they don't necessarily, might not add value to the business?
So this is something that the individual boards need to do. You know, as listed companies, they do have the NRCs, Nomination Remuneration Committee, and they evaluate every person coming on there in the same robust way, fit and proper test, whether they have the required skills and everything. When I say, when we came up with the stewardship framework, we didn't want to be private equity-like in our approach. We didn't want to go in parachute people. But what we wanted to do was put in a framework, an overarching framework, and to say, this is the sort of standards that should be maintained. But then we are empowering the board to make that. So that is where the boards come in, which is why we put in place a regular refresh of the board members from 9 years to 6 years. We wanted a board assessment to be done every 2 years. We wanted the skill set of the board to also be widened to move away from the very traditional boards where we have perhaps the same level of skill set that exists in every board.
Yeah, but how vocal will PNB be if a politician with no technical background becomes even a non-executive chair of one of your businesses?
Well, it's something that we have to see. If the request comes in, I can tell you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good luck with the plan going forward, Jalil, and thank you ever so much for talking to us. We were talking to Jalil Rashid, the President and Chief Executive of Permodalan National Berhad, PNB, with 300 billion ringgit in assets under management, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.